I don't remember what Cameron and this guy got into it about, but Cameron got fired, and we had talked about doing stuff on our own, and literally I heard he got fired, and I called him. I'm like, okay, dude, let's go, let's do it. And he's like, no, we don't have any work yet. And I'm like, no, it's sink or swim. And so I quit immediately that right
same
then.
Day. Yeah. Hey everyone, welcome back to Nailed It. I'm your host, Brandon Jensen, and today's guest is Brian Jessup, one of the founding members of Wind River Excavation and the head of the residential division. Brian isn't just moving dirt, he's solving problems most people in the industry would walk away from. Known for his sharp mind and creative approach, he's the guy people call when the project is complicated, unique, or just plain tough. In this episode, Brian shares some wild stories from the excavation world and the lessons he's learned along the way. Trust me, you're going to love this. Let's dive in. This is Nailed It. Well, Brian, thanks for coming out, taking time out of your busy day to come and join us on the podcast here. And let's kind of jump into it. Tell me a little bit about, you know, your background, your history. You grew up in construction. You found yourself into construction because you didn't want to do anything else. You didn't want to be in an office, stuck inside. Like, kind of give me a little bit of the history.
Yeah. No, thanks for having me first. Back in when I was in high school, I didn't come from construction. My dad did restaurant equipment, like sold and designed, you know, kitchens, layouts, hoods, cooktops.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, main restaurant equipment and layouts and how they function. And anyway, I was always pretty industrious, going out, seeing what I could round up in the neighborhood, mowing lawns, raking leaves, things like that, anything to get some money. Anyway, I was about 16, and my dad was like, you got to get a job. And I was already looking for a job, right? Something part-time. And he's like, you got to get a job. And Harmon's is hiring. They're always needing baggers. And I was... like, there's no way in hell I'm going to be a bagger. You know, that's what I'm thinking. Right? Yeah. I'm like, no, that's not going to work. And he's like, no, you can be a bagger. I'm like, yeah, I'll go find one. We went back and forth for probably several days about me needing to get a job, even though I was looking for one.
Yeah.
And boiled down to it, he kind of got upset with me and said, okay, you're going to go be a bagger. And I'm like, Pop, I'm not going to be a bagger. Right.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, well, you have a week to find something. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I'm out there looking anyway. So I literally did. I mean, went to a lot of little shops around the 21st South area in Salt Lake, because we lived around that area. And there's lots of little shops back then. Couldn't find a job, and I didn't want to be inside either, right? So my week was up, and my dad was adamant, you're going to be a bagger. And me and my dad had a wonderful relationship. But we got kind of heated that day, and I'm like, I am not going to be a bagger. There's just no way. And he's like, all right, well, then I'm going to put you to work. So, we lived in a little sugar house bungalow, basically style.
Yeah. Okay.
And he gave me a shovel, and I dug out the front of the house by hand to do a half cold storage and put a porch cap on top of it. And I don't remember how long it took me, but it had to be well over a week, but I dug the whole front of the house out about
by hand with a shovel,
6 feet deep, the width of the house, and about 6 feet out. Maybe it was a little bit more.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was tired, but that was way better than being a bagger.
Okay. You know, yeah.
That's not beneath me anymore if I need to the work, right?
Yeah.
But back then it was beneath me. And I was just beat, almost done with it. And I'm sitting on the bank, blistered hands, sweating, and guy that lived across the street had a skid loader, and I never even thought about asking him, right?
Yeah.
But he watched me that whole entire time I was digging it, and he walked over that afternoon, and he said, I've never seen anybody work so hard in my life. You need to come to work for me. So I'm like, yeah, that's great. I'd love to do that, right? Plus, he had a skid loader, so we were able to backfill it a lot easier.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a big piece of grass, or not grass, kind of a pasture behind his house. And at night, he said I could mess around with the skid loader. So I would just push dirt up. He stacked a lot of rock walls. he'd had rock in the backyard occasionally when he had to store it somewhere. So I'd push up dirt, I'd grade it out, push it up again, build a rock wall around it, just practice. It was just a lot of fun for me,
just honestly. Teaching yourself how to run a piece of equipment.
Yeah, but it was more fun than
thinking
about what I'm learning, right? And all through high school, I was focused on photography, and I wanted to be in advertising.
Okay.
And like commercial advertising. That's where my aim was heading, and I did a lot of photography through high school. So that's where I thought I wanted to go. And so I just was going to work every day, got to the point where he would send me out with the skid by myself. And soon I was building rock walls, lots of grading. And I remember I was sitting in this backyard. It's one of those days where just the sun just beats you to death, right? And we didn't have enclosed skid loaders back then. So on the Bobcats, the fans came out the sides on the side of the motor. So when those are trying to cool themselves, it kicked up all the dirt and just swirled it right in the cab. That's just how the old school ones did. So when you got home, you were completely just dirt covered.
In your
covered.
Nose, in your
it's
teeth.
It's in your in your nose. It's all over your teeth. It's in your hair. It's in your clothes. It's everywhere. And I just got done grading out this huge backyard that's got a lot of like rolling little hills, and the landscapers have been planting trees on it. I was placing rock here and there just to try to add to the landscape. And I was kind of bummed at that time because I'm not heading towards photography or
advertising.
Thank you. So kind of feeling bad about myself, right? And this is not exactly that day, but thinking I'm not doing what I wanted to do. And I've just always really loved that art that comes with those things, right?
Because how old are you at this time then, maybe?
I'm 51. Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm 51 now.
Yeah.
Back then I was 16, 17.
So you've been doing this maybe for a year with this neighbor.
Yes.
So you're 17. You're like, hey, I'm not headed towards
where I wanted to go,
where I envisioned myself going.
Right. Yeah. And so I just get done and I'm really feeling bad about myself.
Yeah.
I'm kind of just stopped. It's the end of the day and I'm parked in the skid loader. I got my feet up on the edge of it, just kind of sit slumped in the seat, and I'm just looking at this big property. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is art. What I've literally sculpted this backyard, and it just was perfect. It almost looked like you could just throw sod on it. Like it didn't even need to be raked.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is art. And that's what I loved. Right. So then it kind of gave me a new perspective that day. And so anytime I got to go from a skid loader to a loader or a track hoe or a dozer, it was always like, how can I not just do what this machine needs to do, but how can you make it look pretty along the way? So if anybody comes by, they're like, whoa, that looks amazing. So that's kind of how that all started.
That's kind of where your passion and your love for, you know, dirt work.
Yeah.
Was born. That's super cool. I think, you know, I always tell people, you know, when talking about homes and landscaping and different things like that, I always say, look, if it belongs in a magazine or if you've seen it in a magazine, that's a designer and a stylist. That's a landscape architect that's putting that together, and then people that are like bringing it to life, right? Like it's those people who are talented, who kind of like bring some guy's vision on paper to life, and then people go by and be like, oh, I want that. That's what I want. And they want that because, like, you know, somebody had this vision, and then somebody was able to take that vision and bring it to life, which I think is just, I think that's one of the beautiful things about construction.
I'd agree. What people don't realize, including the designers, is the ground will tell you what it wants to do. Yeah, you can manipulate it.
Yeah.
And I tell this to people all the time. Like if I go do like reshape their backyard or do anything, I'm like, okay, I know that this is what the plans are saying to do, but the ground will tell you what it wants to do, right?
Yeah.
And you can manipulate it somewhat, but if you're not doing what it sounds silly. The earth, the ground, what it wants to do.
What nature wants to do.
Nature wants to do, it's not going to look right. So if you let it sounds really silly, but if you let it speak to you, it will.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think that sounds silly at all. I think, you know, there's people who are really in tune with that kind of stuff, and they can look back at something and kind of say, okay, well, this is really what's happening back here. This is really kind of how we can tweak this or modify this and really make it flow the way that we want to. You know, thinking of this, a project that we worked on this last year, you know, we changed quite a few things from the drawings to what we were dealing with in real life situation with the dirt and what the earth, you know, to your point, is kind of telling us to do through there. And I think the owners are ecstatic about it. It turned out beautiful. And that's one of the things I really appreciate about you guys and about your gift and your talent to be able to, look at something and really kind of bring it to life. Right. I always tell people a contractor is only as good as his subs. Right. And so, you know, you guys have been great to work with over the years, but tell me a little bit about how, you know, so there's kind of your passion for dirt work, is born. How did that translate into, you know, Wind River and how did Wind River kind of become, and, you know, you were an integral part of that, and you've been there, you know, basically since the beginning. So tell me, kind of walk me through that story.
Okay. So, that guy that I went to work with, he used to have a guy that he delivered rock to. He was a landscaper at the time, really young kid. And he started another company, in landscaping. And I was dealing with this person a lot, either hauling him rock or occasionally doing a little bit of machine work, for him or with him. And we just got to know one another, and, I was still working for that guy, but it wasn't a really good relationship, because we were newly married and I had bought a skid loader and he was putting me to work, but it wasn't paying the bills. It wasn't paying for the skid loader. So I lost the skid loader and I'm like, I just can't do this anymore. Newly married and I'm getting slapped with debt that I can't keep up with. And so we slowly got out of that and made things right with the, back then it was ICM with Caterpillar. They still have ICM, I believe. Yeah, they do. And got out of that, made that thing right. Didn't want to not pay a debt, right? And then I went to work for this guy. He was still small, but still growing. Worked with him. He had some excavation equipment. And that's when I met Cameron Wright, the owner of Wind River.
Okay.
So we met at this other company. And it was pretty funny because at the very beginning, me and him did not get along at all. Like it was really rough. And there's a few days I thought we were going to go to blows, just arguing back and forth. And it didn't matter about what. We just did not mesh at all.
Yeah.
And so we just kept working together. And I really come to appreciate him more than... There was just something about him. Like there was a connection between me and him that I can never explain to somebody.
Yeah.
And I would never expect them to understand, but somehow there's a relationship there that we're going to be together. And so we started working really well together and we were still at this company and there was just a lot of inefficiencies. In my opinion, corners were being cut. And we just didn't want to have our names attached to anything that was not the best of the best.
Yeah.
Right? The product you install, the way you leave it, the treatment of the customer, all those things, in my opinion, were failing. And so we had talked about doing stuff. He was building a house in Woods Cross. So he was doing some sweat equity for... Dakota Homes.
Okay.
So he was doing a sweat equity for Dakota Homes and he was digging his basement. I helped him with that. And then Dakota Homes said, hey, we've got a whole bunch of conduits that never got installed in this neighborhood back here. And they had a lot of homes back there. So we started installing conduits and we wanted to get away from where in the position that we were in. And we went and bought a couple of the Nextel phones.
We
were
the radio ones.
The radio ones, and you know that was a big, not only a big deal to have those right back then, but it was a big deal not to get caught because like you have plans to do something else. And I don't remember what Cameron and this guy got into it about, but Cameron got fired and we had talked about doing stuff on our own. And literally I heard he got fired and I called him, of course, on the Nextel phone, not the work phone. I'm like, okay, dude, let's go, let's do it. And he's like, no, we don't have any work yet. And I'm like, no, it's sink or swim. And so I quit immediately that same day.
Yeah.
And, he was in panic mode, like, oh no, we can't do this. Right. But yeah, we rented a 410G John Deere backhoe and we just started doing anything and everything we could for Dakota Homes. I mean, we dug 2,500 square foot basements with a backhoe at the very beginning, which we would never do that now. Right.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that's crazy inefficient and very, very difficult. But yeah, we were just digging basements for Dakota Homes and installing those conduits. And yeah, it just kind of evolved from right there.
Yeah. And, well, you know, you made a comment about like doing things right. And I can attest to this. That's one thing that I really appreciate that you guys always do is I never feel like there's corners that are cut, right? When I get, you know, pricing from you guys, I feel like, okay, I'm confident that everything's in here that needs to be in here and it's right. It's not half baked. It's not, you know, I feel confident and you guys know the soils. You've worked all over, you know, obviously the soils are different in Draper than they are in Park City and Midway. They're different than they are in Park City and Salt Lake. And then depending on where you're at and what neighborhood, you know, the dig conditions are different and the soils are different.
You can change lot to lot.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I really appreciate about you guys. So you're working for kind of Dakota Homes. Where's the next piece of equipment, or what's maybe that pivotal moment that changed the trajectory, or like, okay, hey, we're not going to do this anymore. We're going to go big with this because you guys are a big outfit right now.
Yeah, we're. Yeah, definitely a lot bigger than just us two for a long time.
Yeah.
So the next thing, Cameron found a 230 Hitachi, and we needed to get that to make these home excavations go more efficient or dug how they're supposed to be dug, right?
Yeah.
Instead of with the backhoe. We still use the backhoe to death to backfill and do all the utilities and stuff like that. And we basically used it as a loader. But yeah, we got that 230 Hitachi. We had some money, right? We were making some money. We were keeping each other afloat, at least our families at that time. We only had a couple kids each, and it's kind of trying to remember how it all went. But I know that we borrowed a few thousand dollars from my dad, maybe $6,000 to $8,000. To put it down on that Hitachi, and we were working for a guy by the name of Randy Rimmer with Dakota Homes, and he wholesaled trucks out of Canada.
Okay.
So my dad gave us that little bit of money, and he was looking for a truck, so we just talked to Randy, and we're like, well, why don't we just do some trade work with you, and we can pay my dad back. That way he can get a much nicer truck than he could for the dollar amount that we borrowed. And we could pay a lot less because we're doing our own labor. It's in-house. We're eating much smaller costs than just giving that back.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how we got that piece. And geez, now there's, I think the last Traco I saw was marked excavator 101 or 102.
Yeah. So from 1, 230 to now, you know, over 100 pieces of equipment, excavating equipment.
Yeah.
You guys have come a long way. Tell me a little bit about, you know, you mentioned, hey, you're newly married. Obviously at that point you didn't have any kids. You couldn't pay bills. You lost the skid steer. Tell me how you've, you know, managed starting a company, newly married, balance that life of like, you know, home life, work life. Obviously you have, how many kids do you have? Remind me.
I have eight.
Eight. Yeah.
Eight kids.
So there's a lot of of mouths to feed, a lot of kids that, you know, want time and attention from dad and obviously a wife. And tell me a little bit about how you've kind of managed that and maybe some things, some advice, if you will.
I would say that they would still say I'm not there enough today. But yeah, at the beginning, the work-life balance, there wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, it was go from sunup to sundown. You know, we bought a transport truck very early on because we were paying somebody to transport all the time. So we would take turns transporting at night or early in the morning so that myself or Cam and whoever we found that day at Home Depot or the homeless shelter to go to work with us for cash.
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally how it went. So we'd take turns moving equipment early or late at night. And then if the transport broke down, we up at RB's gas station in Bountiful on Fifth South, they gave us a spot to keep the truck. So, you know, if that went down, we were there all night working on it.
Yeah.
So there was not a work-life balance for many, many years. It has gotten better. And I also had to make that switch in my head because work is so easy for me. Uh-huh. It just comes so natural. It's what I need to do. It's what I'm wired to do. And so, yeah, home suffered, which is, you know, heartbreaking. All the stuff that you missed. And I would say that they would say, I still like to miss it, but it's not necessarily true.
But the Brian, I know you've gone on family vacations and you do take time. And I imagine there was, you know, maybe a shift at some point where it was like, hey, I'm, you know, we've got a date night or we've got, you know, with eight kids, I imagine it's a lot to juggle. I mean, my folks had four. I feel like it was a lot for them.
Yeah. I really can't say when that changed. I mean, I did try to put a diligent effort into getting home at a more reasonable hour because it was dark to dark, right?
Yeah.
And dark could have been midnight, whatever that had to be done on the job to get it done. I mean, you're super thin. You've only got a couple of guys and you got a workload more than you can handle. Yeah. So you're trying to keep everybody happy. And, you know, that's the other thing in me is I stress about, I want my customer to feel like they're my only customer.
Yeah.
That's just what I want to have happen. And that's always been very, very difficult. I know you know that.
Yeah.
Trying to keep everybody happy. It's next to impossible. So you just do the best you can. But I still try to make it my goal to make every customer feel like they're my only one. And I probably should do that with my family.
Well, I think... you know, I can appreciate that. And I think all of us who, you know, have helped start a company, the beginning of a company, the owner of a company, like we've all been there to where, you know, there is not that work-life balance. It's dark when you start and it's dark when you stop. And that's easy to do during the winter, but during the summer, right? It's getting dark at 9 o'clock at night, right?
Yeah.
And so I think we've all been there. And when the sun's out, like,
why aren't you working?
Yeah, yeah. We need to, like, you know, we're burning daylight, right?
Well, honestly, it's our wives. It really is. I mean, the support that we got is just absolutely incredible. The support, the love. Yeah, of course, there was some hot moments, right?
Yeah.
When you're just not there. But, I mean, you just can't do what you need to do without the backing and the support of those amazing women.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. When you guys are working with a new contractor, you're starting a new job, maybe it's an owner. What are maybe some of the biggest pitfalls that you see contractors make? And maybe it's engineers, but maybe walk us through kind of maybe some pitfalls, a little bit of educational piece for some of our listeners. What are some things to watch for?
Well, actually, I have an example, I guess, this morning that bites us a lot, right? We were going through an estimate this morning and we know about where the other excavation contractor came in.
Okay.
We know really close and it was 60% less than us. And so I would say one of the pitfalls that a contractor makes is it really truly apples to apples?
Absolutely.
Because I know for a fact that this other contractor that got the job, he has beat to death equipment. He has very little overhead. Their equipment literally goes to the job site with extra hydraulic oil because they're going to need it during the day. I don't know what they pay their people. I don't know if they've got them for a really good price. Because, you know, labor racks up quick, but this equipment is staggering in how much it costs today. And to also the maintenance of it and to keep it looking nice, it's just not a true comparison.
Right.
On the horsepower and, in my opinion, the attention to detail. Because if you're going to let your own company look and appear as rough as it's showing up, are they going to do the same to your job?
Yeah.
I mean, 60% is a lot. That's a big swing. And we're not a low bid excavation company. We don't want to be.
Yeah.
We want to be the best. That's.
Well, I think to me, you know, another thing that stands out, and one of the things that we've tried to do on our side is provide really detailed, like, this is what we want. I want you to run this. I want you to run this. I want, like, we try to be really detailed so that when we do get multiple bids, those bids should be apples to apples. Cause a lot of times we're providing footages, you know, we don't get to the point where we're providing cut fill on anything, but as much as possible, we're trying to provide everything we can so that there's no question, right? So if one contractor looks at it and they bid this, the next contractor looks at it and they hypothetically should be bidding the same thing.
Should be. But even on their imports, you're not speccing out your imports, I'm sure.
No.
So are they going to go with an inferior product?
Yep. And that's where I think that is a big pitfall that contractors make. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, a good contractor, they have their team, they know what they're providing. They have a good understanding of what expectation is, right? I think one thing that I really appreciate, and I remember when we first started working together was, you know, we almost always would backfill with gravel, right? Cause we get 100% compaction.
Yep.
We don't have slabs that are sloughing off. We don't have, and if we need to do, you know, any type of drainage or like we've got the gravel there to be able to do that. And so, that's one thing that I've noticed. And I think, you know, that's such a small thing, but I look at that and I go, okay, like that's such a small thing, not a huge cost, but when you look at some of the projects that we're doing, right. And you ask owners and contractors and things like that, I say, is it really worth saving that few thousand dollars for this that gives you so much more insurance, if you will?
It's cheap insurance at the beginning.
Yeah.
You have a failure, it's going to be 10 times as much.
Very cheap. And I imagine you run into this because I see this. It's like the owner, that $7,000 entry door set. Like, I can do that, right? But, I don't want to pay any money for dirt, right? It's because dirt's not, it's not pretty, right? I don't want to pay to import or export, because dirt's expensive, right? It's expensive to move it, expensive to haul it, expensive to get rid of it. So anyway, maybe tell me, you know, kind of a cool experience that you've had over the last, you know, 30 plus years of doing this that really kind of stands out to you. And then maybe if there's another lesson learned or some educational piece you could leave us with.
I'll have to jump back to what you said. As you know, as you being the GC, building your team, I think that's just hugely important. If you're with a GC that has a team and you show up and you know what to expect out of the soffit and fascia guy, right?
Yeah.
And you're a dirt guy, you should have nothing to do with him. But when you're interacting with all these guys the same day, you're not fighting for real estate. You have a good relationship. They sometimes need things moved and they don't have the equipment there to move it. The equipment's there to move it. And then there's some horse trading that happens all the time on these jobs. And, you know, even with the finished carpenters, on guys like you and other, we have some amazing GCs that we work for and we have for 20 years, and their team makes these jobs go super fluid. And that's, you know, I just really appreciate that more than anything on these jobs.
I think owners sometimes don't always grasp that, right? I always, one of the things I tell people is, look, we want to be like transparent. We want to show you everything. This is what we're charging. And we're not hiding anything, right? Our goals, like you said, we're not here to be the cheapest, but we're here to deliver what it is you want. So at the end of the day, you're happy. And we always want to go in with, you know, realistic budgets, hard bid thing as much out as possible. Cause I jokingly tell people, like, at the end of the job, we want you talking to us.
Cause I
know there's contractors who finish the job and owners are like, good riddance, I'll never talk to them again.
No.
And you know, maybe they got what they wanted, but the communication or the transparency on the front end was so off that now they're upset.
It's all about the next job.
Yeah.
It's always all about the next job and that communication. And yeah, we've definitely been on the sites where that's going to be their last job with that person. And that's actually heartbreaking, right? You're there to help them literally build their dream.
Yeah.
And you want to build their dream with the highest quality that you possibly can, down to the dirt. And the foundation is where you start, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, watching how the soil conditions are to make sure that that foundation is never going to move, or the material that you put back, whether it's gravel or an e-fill. Yeah, we can make native work, and we're going to do our very best to make that work, right? But there's still going to be a failure rate because it's material we've already had on site. Yeah. Who knows what it is? They don't want to pay for a proctor to know what the density of that material is so you can achieve the appropriate compaction, or how hard do you have to work to achieve that compaction? So, and that's one of the disappointing things about my world is most of our beautiful work is buried not appreciated. I mean, I stop and look at job sites all the time, and you know, that we're not on, to see what some other excavator is doing. And you walk up to an excavated sewer trench and you look down there and they've got their pipe upside down. Like, the bells are downhill. Bells always go uphill. It's just stupid stuff like that. A homeowner would never know, but if a bell is on backwards, that's got a very sharp lip inside of it. So it's going to start catching toilet paper and just going to catch things.
Yep.
I mean,
wet wipes.
It's going to catch it all. And soon you're going to be plugged.
And then you're plugged.
And then you're called with a hot owner. And then I'm called because I have the sewer, right?
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, the other contractors, it's little stupid things of putting the pipe in the right direction. Yes, it still works. And you may never have a problem, but Why wouldn't you want to do it right the first time?
Yeah, because that's an expensive mistake, right? To dig that up, to make those repairs.
Yeah.
So, well, Brian, tell me, maybe fill me in on a little bit of what you guys like to see when you start a job, right? You come up to a job, and you like to have a pre-con, you like to do a pre-con with the general, the owners. How involved do you like owners to be?
Owners?
Yeah.
It depends on the owner.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly depends on the owner. Or do you prefer, like, hey, you know, let's just work directly with the general contractor? Because as you know, it's like you have some owners that want to be involved heavily. You have other owners that are kind of like hands off, right? And some of it depends, like, if they're remote, if they're close, if they're but I think, you know, some of it, I think you can provide an educational aspect to owners to help them see, like, value in something.
Yeah, no, I actually like working with owners. There's a fine line there, right? Because you don't want any communication to not make it back to the GC. And so when you are working with owners, they fail to mention something, you fail to mention something to the GC, and then they're caught with how did we get here, right?
Yeah.
And that's really ugly. But it's fun to educate the owners, especially when you have the super involved ones, and they want to know what your world's about. Like, okay, yeah, that you're here to do me this. What can you teach me about it? And yeah, that's part of the funnest part, is the teaching opportunity, right? But that's the fine line of the communication that doesn't make it back to the GC. I don't like it when owners
don't relay.
I've had several times where they just would rather come to me than the GC, mm-hmm. So that tells me I'm the path of least resistance, right?
Yeah.
Of course, I try to inform that person as quickly as possible, but that puts us all in a very bad situation.
Yeah.
So if, I'd love to teach, love to have you involved, even run the equipment if you want, right? But let's make sure the GC's there.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that owners really enjoy kind of getting in. We do the break ground ceremony. They like to get in the piece of equipment and you lift them up and down. I mean, I think owners really enjoy that. It's fun for the kids and different things like that. As we kind of wrap up here, tell me what you're seeing right now from a labor standpoint, right? I mean, this is something that it comes up with almost every sub, finding good guys, training good guys, keeping good guys. Because I heard a statistic the other day, for every 100 people that are leaving construction, 14 are coming in.
Yeah.
And our jobs as a general and subcontractors, I've noticed, have become increasingly more difficult, right? I have subs that are starting on one job in the morning, coming to our job midday, and then after leaving our job, going to a third job. You know, they're working 20-hour days just to try and get all the work done that's out there, because there's not kind of the help that we need. But maybe just kind of fill us in on what you've seen, how you guys have been able to maybe overcome some of those hardships, where you guys are kind of at right now. Like, are you looking for people? Do you have good people? Obviously, we're kind of going into slow season, but maybe give us some of your insight on labor.
Okay. So we have some amazing people right now. I mean, truly talented men, right? And men and women that are working with us right now. I have about 28 guys that I oversee every single day. I have 8 crews. We handle for the most part, the high-end residential. And my guys are so talented. They're amazing. I can leave. I can trust them to do the right thing. I can trust them to talk to the GC or the owner. And they really do a solid job. And we're finding that the best talent, because it's really, really hard to find talent, right? You just talked about it. Nobody's teaching the next generation. All these trades are slipping away very rapidly, and it's actually terrifying. And if we don't figure out how to bring that next generation in, the building industry is going to skyrocket in price. I mean, an operator is going to command a surgeon's wage if there's none out there. That's what's going to happen.
Supply and demand.
Right.
I mean, I tell people all the time, your plumber's you're going to call your plumber. I mean, he's going to tell you $900 to come out.
Right.
That's more than my attorney. He's going to say, well, then hire your attorney to fix your toilet.
Exactly. Right? Like, but they're the only ones that'll do it.
Yeah.
So we're finding that we're getting the best talent on word of mouth. Hey, guys, the guys that work for us, hey, who do you want to work with? Who do you want to train? Right.
Yeah.
And they're not going to bring somebody in they don't want to be with. They can't trust, right? So that's where we're finding most of the talent that has actually stuck here. When they come through the door, whether it's we posted it online or put out an ad somewhere, they usually don't end up staying long. It's the guys that are already here, already established, that are bringing that new blood in. But yeah, we do need to figure out a way to really help the youth of today find other avenues to get into these trades.
Yeah.
I mean, they're slipping away so fast, it's scary.
They are. And, you know, I mean, I have nephews, and it's like, what do you want to be? I want to be a TikTok influencer.
Yeah.
And they've grown up with this screen in their hand. I think about one of my nephews going and digging a hole, right? Like you did when you were 16 years old. And I think, well, geez, man, I mean, they might start, but they'd probably give up.
Yeah. They probably would. Luckily I have 6 boys and 2 daughters, right? My daughters are married, still have the 6 boys for the most part at home. And luckily they are workers.
Learned that from you.
They get out there, they get it done. But yeah, they're not going to come into excavation. Maybe one, possibly two.
Yeah.
But we got to figure out how to get the youth into the trades. Like this is something we got to figure out as a society, because this is dangerous. We're entering very dangerous territory. I don't think people realize how in bad shape we are.
Yeah. Well, I know the NAHB a number of years ago had started some pilot program to help with some of that, but I don't really know where that's at or where what's happened with that. But to your point, like, I think whatever is being done, which I think is very little, we probably need to look at doing more, right?
Yeah, maybe we should put out a, I mean, there's lots of Instagram and TikTok pages of construction, right? But maybe we should come up with something to help drive that in. I don't think the youth today realize how powerful they actually are. I think agree. A lot of them don't realize that.
Yep.
And maybe that's because they don't have the support at home or the support of the community, or, I mean, because a lot of the kids feel alone these days, and it's because of these screens.
Yeah.
They're disconnecting themselves. So if we can somehow figure out how to pull that in, that'd be amazing.
The comment I always make to nephews and kids, and I always say, hey, look, man, people will pay you to solve problems. You got to solve your own problems, right? And when these kids are able to solve their own problems, it builds confidence within them. It, like, you know, and then I think they start to, you know, open up their mind to, like, oh, there's these possibilities. I can do that, right? Because I'll hear kids say, oh, I've never done that. I don't know how to do it. And I'll say, do you think the first person who started doing this knew how to do it? They just said, oh, well, I think this is how I'm going to do it. And they did it, right?
Yeah.
So it's just, there's a certain level of thinking, right? That critical thinking, if you will. But yeah, I think to your point, we're definitely in dangerous territory and moving towards more dangerous territory.
For sure.
So, well, Brian, I appreciate you coming, stopping in, sharing with us today. We're super excited about this, and we'll look forward to having you back on the show at a later date. We'd love to come out in the field and you know, get a little bit of B-roll that we'll also make available as a part of the pod to maybe do a little bit of education on site on one of your jobs. And so we'll look forward to working with you in the future and having you back here at a later date.
Yeah, I'd love to come back and come out anytime. We'll put you in some equipment.
Yeah, I love it.
I
always tell people, hey, you don't want me digging your foundation. I backfilled my foundation and it was a little scary. I lost quite a few bolts, chunked it in a couple of spots. So I think people don't quite
realize.
We've
all done that.
Yeah, people don't realize how touchy those joysticks are and how powerful the equipment is, right?
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful.
Fortunately, I was in a mini backfilling. So if I'd been in, something bigger, I would have been making foundation repairs.
Well, I've blown some pretty big holes in some walls over the years, for sure.
You do it enough, it happens, right? I always say, hey, if you service pools and you walk around a pool enough, eventually you're gonna fall in the swimming pool.
It's a guarantee. Yeah.
So, well, thanks again, Brian. Great to have you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.